coming up on today's program, restoring a local memorial and meeting the Light Pirate author. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISO Weekend. As always, thanks for sharing your weekend with WISO. Coming up later in the program, we'll also meet the Ohio Newsroom Managing Editor, Claire Roth. Up first, Sunday, June 14th, that's today for many of you listening, is Flag Day. And on Veterans Voices, Marine Corps veteran Zach Sliver introduces us to a Dayton resident who noticed the flag missing from a local memorial and instead of walking past it, decided to do something about it. It's a story about the meaning of the American flag, the cost of war, and why honoring those sacrifices still matters today.
Jerry Bowling III is the kind of person who notices things other people walk past. He's lived in Old North Dayton his entire life, and he's always been someone who gives back, volunteering, helping neighbors, and staying involved in the community he loves. But one day, something caught his attention that he couldn't shake. The flagpole at the North Dayton Patriots Memorial stood empty. To some, an empty flagpole may not seem important, but to many people, the American flag represents something deeply personal. The people who served, the people who never made it home. Jerry felt that absence. Rather than waiting for someone else to fix it, he took initiative. He organized a community effort to bring the American flag back to the memorial where it belongs.
For me, it just didn't seem right to have a memorial without a flag there. Now, there was a wooden structure where, like, these little wood flags, short flags, could be placed. And I started placing flags there, especially because there was no flag on the flagpole that was adjacent to the memorial.
Yeah.
Just from a personal standpoint, when my father passed away and the fact that he was a veteran, I was the person, his oldest son, that got the flag that was presented. And, you know, my father didn't lose his life in war, but yet we have those that have lost their life in war, and the significance of honoring them and the flag is a big part of that.
Why is maintaining this memorial so important for the community?
I think for the local people in Old North Dayton, one, the sacrifices that were made by this portion of the city and this neighborhood and the loss that happened because of war. And hopefully, you know, when you think about loss and war, maybe it will give you some incentive to avoid war in the future. You know, and a lot of our young people, I think, feel that way now. I don't think they went through a lot of the things that my generation did, but they sure know how important peace is.
So I understand that there's a special flag event connected to the memorial. Can you tell us what's planned?
Yeah. Sunday, June 14th at 2 p.m., and that is Flag Day. So we're going to celebrate the rededication of the memorial because it was renovated by a company called Modern Monument, and they did a great job. Then we're also going to celebrate the 80th anniversary of the awarding of the Congressional Medal of Honor to Corporal Tony Stein from the Marine Corps. Then we're going to celebrate the flag, the dedication of the flagpole, and the fact that it's flying the flag again. We'll have different groups, including some veteran groups and other groups at the event as well. This week, I was sent a picture from another volunteer where the flag is actually flying on the pole now, the U.S. flag and Ohio flag. And actually, I was at work and I had to kind of compose myself. I went over there to check that out, and it was pretty awesome to see that. You know, we grew up doing the pledge in school, my generation.
Yeah.
You know, so understanding what the flag means or the different meanings of the flag.
Yeah.
They say people defended it, fought for it. So the flag means a lot.
That Flag Day celebration will be held Sunday, June 14th at 2 p.m. at Point Park. Veterans Voices is presented by Wright-Patt Credit Union. Additional support comes from the Dayton Ombudsman Veterans Transition Team and Montgomery County Veterans Service Commission. Veterans Voices is produced at the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices, as is WYSO Youth Radio. Check it out.
This is Aubrey Ernst. I'm a sophomore at Tippecanoe High School.
This is Elizabeth Bundenthal. I'm a sophomore at Tippecanoe High School.
This is Natalie Arnold. I'm a senior at Tippecanoe High School.
This spring, these three students had the exciting opportunity to interview Lily Brooks Dalton, author of The Light Pirate, a novel that imagines a future shaped by climate change and hope. The Light Pirate was the runner-up for the 2023 Dayton Literary Peace Prize, and the students were eager to learn more about the inspiration behind the acclaimed novel and the author who created it.
I think that all of my novels are concerned with civilization, the relationship between people and land, with our place in history, both how we're occupying it now, how we'll be remembered, how we think about the people who have come before us, just like our lineage in the sense of civilization, I think is something that ties all the books together.
Everyone has different reactions, so I was wondering if there was a particular reaction that you have come across and have been surprised to the reaction.
I hear from a lot of people who are like, I don't usually read this kind of book, or like, I don't like post-apocalyptic fiction. I kind of picked this up by accident and was surprised that I really liked it. I guess because I like to read all kinds of books, and I feel like that's important to me to dabble in all the different genres, even genres that I don't write in. For me, it's really just like, make it good.
When you get an idea for a story, like, how do you explore that idea to see if you want to turn it into a story or like a full-length novel, or if you just want to put it aside in a little box and like save it for later?
That's a really good question. If I get an idea, I have like a place in my phone and my notes app where I just write them all down, and some of them just sit there forever, being some small fragment. I think if it starts to grow, that's how I know it's gaining some traction in my imagination. Yeah, it's just a matter of sensing into how big the idea can be, how many moving parts it has, you know. So I look back at that app, at that notes app, and some of the things I've written down to me seem really nonsensical now. It's like, why did I feel compelled to write that down? And some of them I'm like, oh, there's a whole universe inside that little note that I made.
Based on all the research you've conducted and all the things you've learned about the environment, is there something that you would want to tell the audience that is reassuring and true?
Your questions are hard. I don't know. Here's something. I think it's really easy to feel like the world is ending. And I think that's where a lot of my fiction comes from, is this feeling like we are on the precipice as a culture, as a civilization. And I guess the thing that is both reassuring and true would be that we have been here before. Like, we have felt this a lot over the course of history, this feeling of like, we don't know what comes after this. Like, what could possibly come next? That's it. That's what it is to be in a quickly evolving society. I don't know. I don't know how reassuring that is, but I think that is true. And so far, the world has continued. And so I think there's always a moment after this one, even when it feels like, oh my God, this might be the last one, the last one.
Thank you for your time.
Special thanks to Amy Noel, Eric Knapp, and Lisa Santucci for helping bring this project to life. WYSO Youth Radio is made possible with support from the Ohio Arts Council and is produced right here at WYSO and the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices.
Catch a new episode of WYSO Youth Radio every Thursday on Morning Edition and All Things Considered. You can listen in Sunday mornings and on this podcast, WYSO Weekend, and listen to past episodes anytime at WYSO.org. You're listening to WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenny, and every once in a while we get to have an in-studio guest with us, and today it is Claire Roth, Managing Editor of the Ohio Newsroom. Claire, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Jerry.
First time in the new WYSO studios. What do you think?
Oh my goodness. It's so gorgeous. It's so beautiful. So much natural light. I love it in here.
So let's talk a little bit about your job first as Managing Editor of the Ohio Newsroom. Give us a summary of the scope of that position.
Yeah. So if you've ever heard today from the Ohio Newsroom, that is the flagship program of my team. And I was the original creator of that. I was the first person in this position. So I planned all that out, figured out what we would focus on, how we would focus on it, which I'm sure we'll chat about, and hired my two reporters, Aaron Gottsacker and Kendall Crawford, who listeners have almost surely heard on air. And we every day make a new feature from around the state. So I am guiding their pitches and their stories. I'm editing them, helping them get to air. I'm working with reporters from all over the state, people like Adriana Martinez Smiley, the environmental reporter here, connecting her with, you know, another environmental reporter in Cincinnati and in Cleveland, and doing coordinated coverage of those sorts of things. Series like we did a run up to the last election where we looked at various issues that are happening all over Ohio. So I coordinate coverage that way. And then I'm also looking at the overall direction of the newsroom. So we just hired a new reporter, an Appalachian reporter. And that person will be covering, you know, a very specific region in Appalachian, Ohio. And that was something that I was behind too, kind of spearheading new projects like that.
I want to talk a little bit about the direction and the mission and what kind of stories you look for as a managing editor. But I remember when this collaboration was just getting off the ground and you paid a visit to each of the participating stations, right? Tell me a little bit about how much it took to get this off the ground.
Yeah, so we are really lucky in Ohio. We have five newsrooms in, you know, different metros around the state. We've got Yellow Springs / Dayton here, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Columbus, Athens. But there are so many places in the state that have no coverage, right? The Bucyruses, even the Toledos, where we have a station, but there are no reporters there. So when I first started, I went to all of the stations and just really got a sense of, A, what would you like this collaborative to be? You'll be running our coverage. You'll be bringing it to listeners. What do your listeners want and need? And also, what do you already have covered? So you'll notice that Aaron and Kendall, they don't do any stories from Yellow Springs or Dayton, because you all do such an excellent job of covering that. But our goal is to unearth those stories you might not have heard. I'm thinking of one recently where they went to Trumbull County for a treasure hunt. Someone literally put on a treasure hunt. He garnered donations from around the city, and he planted clues to try to get more tourism to the area. So they went on that treasure hunt. Just various things that are, you know, happening in places that you won't hear unless you're listening to the Ohio Newsroom. And that's something that was a really cool opportunity, but also a daunting one, because of course, if no one's done what you're doing, then you don't have a roadmap to follow. And that was a big challenge, really, really fun for me. But it took about 6 months of research before we really got going. 6 months of my research before I hired my reporters. And then another, I think, 3 to 4 months of us kind of figuring out, what will this look like? What is reporting most effective, and what will be best for our listeners around the state?
We've had a lot of great response to the program since its start here at this station, and I'm sure that's what you've heard from all over the state and the participating stations.
We have gotten a lot of great comments from listeners at every single station that we're participating in, and I really think that speaks to the sort of people that love public radio. Sometimes people are like, well, I only care about something if it's happening right down my street. But that's not how public radio listeners are. They want to know what's going on across all of Ohio. They want to know how what's happening in their backyard might have an echo across the state. I'm thinking about, we looked at accessory dwelling units and the different cities' approaches to these what are called ADUs. And we were able to compare and contrast what was happening here in this part of the state with what's going on in Northeast Ohio and Northwest Ohio. And so I really think it speaks to the curiosity of listeners and to their hunger to know what's going on in their state. Our tagline is, you know, Today from the Ohio Newsroom connects you with news and neighbors from all over Ohio. And I really believe that that's true, that someone who's in Toledo is still my neighbor, even though I live in Columbus, and the same here in Yellow Springs, and the same in Steubenville, and the same in, I mean, on the other border, all over Ohio. We care about each other.
That really makes sense. And I'll tell you, some of my favorite pieces are some of the quirky outlier stories that your reporters get to, first of all, go to a city they've never been to, and then dig into this kind of weird, crazy festival that takes place every year, or even the Made in Ohio series. It really gives you an understanding of where we live and who our neighbors are.
Yes. And I lived in Columbus for 4 years. I was an All Things Considered host like you at WOSU, unlike you. And I, you know, loved Columbus, and I learned a ton about Columbus by being in that position. But I honestly didn't explore past Columbus. I would sometimes come to Yellow Springs because I love Yellow Springs. Yeah. But beyond that, I didn't know what was going on in Ohio. I did not understand the scope of the state and its shape. And I'll tell you that we get people who say, I've lived here for 30 years and I didn't know the thing that I discovered through your program. There's so much richness here, and there's richness all over the state. And I feel really lucky that we get to unearth it, that we get to dig into it.
And how did you get into journalism?
I wanted to major in the universe. I wanted to learn about everything. And I thought that if I studied journalism, I would be able to stick a microphone in anyone's face and say, well, what's this like? What's that like? I felt like I would learn all of the time. And I also believe really deeply in conversation. I think that you can learn so much by talking with people. And that's, I think, what drew me to radio. I had a professor. I didn't know what public radio was. You know, you hear all these people that are like, oh, I listen from the back seat. My family did not at all. And I was in college and I had a professor say, you know, you've got a decent voice. You might consider radio. And I was doing so poorly in all my journalism classes and I was very starved for compliments. And so I was like, okay, I'll do that. And I applied to every station in my hometown and ended up in radio.
It's great that a personal mission turned into a professional one.
Absolutely. And I will say, personal mission-wise and professional-wise, I'm so lucky that they line up. I'm a Quaker. I really believe in the inherent dignity of every person. I believe in everyone's humanity, and that if we can better see each other's humanity, we can live together more easily, better. And that is what I love about my job, that I get to learn about the humanity of all of these different Ohioans. And I feel like I know them, even if I never get to meet them, because, of course, my reporters are the ones doing the hardest work and getting out there and finding those stories. So I'm incredibly blessed. I can't believe that I get to do what I get to do.
Another reason we do these interviews is to find out a little bit of personal information about people who are working with WYSO and in our orbit. Tell us a little bit about yourself, if you don't mind.
Well, my social security number is... No, I'm just kidding. So I live in Columbus with my husband, Tommy. I have a stepdaughter, Caitlin. We have a cat, Nosferatu. Unlike her name suggests, she does not bite. She's very, very sweet.
She's probably cuter, too.
Yeah, I think so. And I came from Iowa. I grew up in Iowa, so I have a lot of Midwest pride. Went to school right outside of Chicago at Northwestern University and really ended up here for the job. Thought that, you know, I'll probably move on from Ohio after a couple years, and really fell in love with the community I made here. Of course, fell in love with my husband, which helps. What else do I do? I'm a huge baker. I love baking. I love being able to follow a recipe and knowing that it's going to turn out. So few things in life are that way. And I'm like, oh, if I add sugar and butter and eggs, it will turn into cookies and people almost assuredly will like it. I just wish there were more, you know, sure things in life that way. Oh, what else? I am going to Michigan next year for a fellowship. I'm very excited about that. I'll be in Ann Arbor for the year, learning more about journalism, bringing those lessons back to the Ohio Newsroom. I don't know what else.
But before we move on, biggest success story as far as baking.
Oh, as far as baking.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
What turned out just so well that
during the COVID-19 pandemic, my first birthday during the COVID years, I made a Swedish princess cake, which I'd seen on Great British Bake Off years before. And I'd always thought, oh, my gosh, that looks amazing. And it's multiple layers of Victorian sponge. I made my own jam. I made my own custard, made my own whipped cream. And then you have to roll out marzipan, dye it green. I made marzipan. I covered it. It was such a production. And it is really, it's very fun to do something like that and get to share it with people. I tell my husband, I'm like, I'll make you anything you want except for laminated dough, because like croissants, that's too much work. I've done it before. I won't do it again. But yeah, I love just the other day, Caitlin, my stepdaughter, asked me if I would make a certain cake for her next birthday. She's like, could you make a Black Forest cake? And there's nothing better than using a skill set to make someone you love happy. And so I that's why I really like baking. It's so fun to be able to do that for people.
That's great. Claire Roth, managing editor of The Ohio Newsroom. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
Let's check out one of the stories we heard this week from The Ohio Newsroom.
Today from The Ohio Newsroom, bringing back a threatened bug.
Support comes from Ohio CASA. Ohio CASA's mission is to ensure children experiencing abuse and neglect have a caring, trained adult in their corner. Information about CASA volunteer work is at ohiocasa.org.
I'm Claire Roth. Once widespread across Ohio, the American burying beetle nearly went extinct a few decades ago. Now, a network of conservationists is reintroducing it to the state. The Ohio Newsroom's Aaron Gottsacker reports.
The United Titanium Bug Zoo at Ohio State University's campus in Worcester is full of creepy, crawly critters in extra-large sizes. Tarantulas bigger than the palm of my hand, cave cockroaches 8 times the size of the typical urban dwellers, and millipedes that grow to be a foot long. But the insect I'm here to see today is much smaller.
What do you say, maybe 2 inches long? Inch and a half, 2 inches?
Jenny Philbrin, the facility's manager and zookeeper, holds a shiny black and orange beetle in the palm of her gloved hand. She loves all bugs, but has a special affinity for this one.
And they have the cutest little orange antennas.
The American burying beetle once roamed across 35 states, from Rhode Island to Texas. But their population drastically declined in the early to mid-1900s. Starting in the 70s, none were found naturally in Ohio for around 40 years.
The habitat loss and food sources are more scarce with all the urbanization. They're attracted to light also, so a lot of our light pollution has pulled them away from their actual habitats.
By 1989, the beetle was in danger of going extinct entirely. It was among the first insects to be placed on the federal endangered species list. Those with entomophobia might not think that's a bad thing, but they play an important role in the ecosystem. Like their name suggests, American burying beetles find and bury small dead animals like pigeons or chipmunks by digging up the dirt beneath them so the carcass slowly sinks into the ground. That way, instead of getting picked off by scavengers, the corpse's nutrients get recycled back into the soil. Plus, the beetles help control fly populations.
Because they are eating things that live on dead animals.
For years, groups like the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Gardens and the Wilds have been working to reintroduce the species to the state. Now, Ohio State's Bug Zoo is joining the effort.
So this is where we did all the breeding.
In a dark room full of carefully labeled plastic boxes, Philbrin walks me through that process. First, she strategically pairs the beetles up, following a strict plan set by researchers. This is to ensure their babies will be genetically diverse and therefore more likely to survive. Then they're put in a steamy setting, a 5-gallon bucket filled with dirt and a dead rat. And they get busy right away, burying the vermin and laying their eggs nearby in a matter of hours.
It's like us burying a bull elephant in 12 hours with no tools.
The beetles also remove the dead animal's fur or feathers and coat it with excretions to make a sort of rat meatball. It's a way to preserve the feast for their soon-to-hatch eggs. A few days later, the larvae...
They look like pearly white beads all put together. So it's more of a grub, but they are relatively clean and non-smelly for what they're eating and how they're living.
After about 2 months, nearly 200 of them will have transformed into adult beetles. They'll be released at the wilds later this month. Not all of them will make it. In fact, it took a decade of trying before scientists found evidence of a few beetles surviving the Ohio winter in the wild. But successful efforts since 2019 have scientists hopeful. After releasing a record number of American burying beetles at the site last year, they later captured over 100, a sign that the threatened species is making its digs in Ohio once again. At the United Titanium Bug Zoo in Worcester, I'm Erin Gottsacker.
That's all today from the Ohio Newsroom. We'll talk with you Monday.
This is Bird Note. That soft cooing sound comes from common pigeons called rock pigeons. Every spring, down-covered mallard ducklings follow their mother across a pond. Goslings graze alongside their Canada geese parents in waterfront parks. Baby chickens peck the ground soon after hatching. But why do we never see baby pigeons? Some baby birds, like those down-covered ducks, geese, and chickens, leave their nest shortly after hatching and do a lot of growing up while following their parents around. Others, like pigeons, stay in the nest and depend on their parents to feed and protect them well into their youth. When young rock pigeons finally leave the nest, they are full-sized with adult feathers, and they look like their parents. So, unless you look carefully under a city bridge, you aren't likely to ever see a baby pigeon. It's easy to imagine, when hearing soft cooing sounds like these, why baby pigeons would rather stay in the nest. But the reason is they wait to fledge until they are nearly independent, and the task of getting on with life is a bit easier. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. Support for Bird Note is provided by Mary Piggott from Seattle, Washington, and generous listeners around the world.
Bird Note putting a wrap on this edition of WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. Our program is available as a podcast wherever you download and subscribe to your podcasts. Please feel free to share us on social media. Our theme music is Another Beautiful Day in Paradise by Magnolia Bolthead. I'm Jerry Kenny. We'll be back next weekend with more highlights and conversations for you then.